just like some really deep, like hyperfixated 10-year-old energy coming off me in waves when I talk about Pokemon sometimes.
It's great. I love it. Also, you can have my Pokemon budget. I don't have anything whatsoever to say about Pokemon in the least, so you can just take mine.
We really need to, I think, look at our budget again if each of us has a Pokemon budget.
That's why this podcast doesn't make any money.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For Masochists and Other Deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 148, we're discussing the non-genre of our other current media interests.
No books from me this month.
That's okay, I make up for it.
Yes, obviously.
And who are we?
My name's RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia.
My name's Matthew. I'm a librarian also in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa band of Paiutes.
My name is Megan. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
Hooray!
I felt like there should be, yeah, rainbows and stars or something after that announcement.
Speaking of announcements.
Hey!
Totally intentional.
Definitely. What are we announcing this episode? Episode 150 is just two episodes away. So if you have anything that you would like us to talk about on that episode, we are not looking for full episode topics, but shorter things that probably won't take up a full episode. So if you're like, tell us about your pets. What was your favorite childhood picture book? Maybe that's an entire episode for some of us, but hopefully not. Megan, tell us about your bicycle. You know, those sorts of questions.
Oh, I have a slideshow for this.
Oh, no. You know this is a podcast, Megan.
That's what Twitch is for.
It's just additional content. I can, you know, people can follow along.
Speaking of Twitch, I think also in celebration of our 150th episode, RG and I might actually do that ranking of all the original 151 Pokemon. So if you want to see us do that for some reason, let us know as well.
Mm-hmm. 150, it's synergy. It's great.
Yep.
It's 151, but you know, we'll get into it.
we can just use the one that we left out. We're just not going to rank one of them is really what it'll come down to. RJ, because this is one of our non-genre episodes, we've put together a book list of titles from a genre that we covered in the first few years of the podcast, a retrospective book list of titles by authors of color in a specific genre. What is our genre this month, or this episode?
Yes, this episode, our retrospective genre is detective fiction novels by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. And because there's a lot of overlap between detective fiction and a lot of other genres we've done, like in the last year, I decided to make this list a little extra special. This is going to be a list of 20 recent detective fiction novels by BIPOC authors. So all of the titles on this episode's list were published within the last 2 years.
Wow. Great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fresh new books.
Ones we couldn't have even mentioned when we originally did that episode of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that we'll be doing this forever.
Yes. Whenever we finish the list of genres.
Do not point out the flaws in our system.
We can just start over.
Oh, no.
Yes.
They just keep publishing books. It's a real problem.
We're never going to run out of genres anyway. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm excited for young adult Amish vampire romance in the year 2046.
I'm still holding out for caveman detective stories. Or cave person detective stories. That's the big 2050s trend.
I mean, that thing that I said is a real, I would have a book for that, because Just Plain Wrong podcast did do a young adult Amish vampire romance novel.
Yep.
I think I might have read that. Unless there's more than one.
Maybe you just listened to the episode of Just Plain Wrong, where they discussed it.
Yeah.
I think that's the better way to experience that fiction, to be totally honest.
It wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah, I think that's about what they said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things we may or may not have read.
So yeah, a few times a year we do these episodes in which we talk about the media we consume that is not for the podcast, because so much of our media consumption is for the podcast. But we do read or watch or listen to, or I suppose in previous episodes, eat other things, non-podcast related things that we enjoy. So we're going to talk about some of them today.
I've got an eating one.
Oh no.
Nice.
Okay, this is, I'm going to put the, add this to our bingo sheet, is food. And if you have anything you'd like to submit for our updated version of the bingo sheet, things we say or things we talk about all the time, please let us know and we will add them to the 2022 Book Club for Masochists bingo sheet that you'll be able to download and play along at home.
Food. I didn't make it noodles this time, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, is it noodles?
No, no, it's spaghetti. Completely different.
Spaghetti is noodles.
They are not the same.
They're a noodle. That's a noodle.
They're long, stringy, starchy things. Like, what?
I don't know what he's talking about, but it has nothing to do with any form of noodle-ish object, spaghetti or otherwise.
Okay.
She's just making a terrible joke.
Noodle-ish objects.
Noodle-ish objects, yes.
Just trying to think of all the noodle-ish objects that I know.
All right, shall I get us started then? Why don't I start with my non-noodle food item?
Please do.
All right. I'm actually, like, that's sort of a thing that I am grouping with my actual topic that I want to bring up, which is that I have a tiny, tiny little bit of... TikTok viewing time that I do. It's very minuscule. There's not much, but pretty much my prime reason at this point for doing it is this one creator, B. Dylan Hollis. That's B is a first initial. B. Dylan, DYLANHOLLIS. And you can, if you're not on TikTok, you can find a sampling of his work also on YouTube under the same name. He is a young man who cooks old recipes. He cooks recipes from the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s that he finds in old cookbooks. And on TikTok, it's very loud and very flamboyant and lots of innuendo. And it's wonderful. It's utterly hilarious. He's delightful. The recipes are very questionable, but often awesome. And then on YouTube, he puts up a small selection of those TikTok videos, but he also has a handful of longer ones that sort of like take a recipe and explain a bunch of components about it and tries out some different versions of it and just, you know, goes into a little more depth and is less loud and less flamboyant and, you know. It's not getting the full experience. You could go to TikTok for that. So I highly recommend that. I'm tying that with my food recommendation this month, which is a very simplistic one, like super duper. And it's not a thing I baked because I don't bake. I just watch bakers on TikTok.
Or in your kitchen when I'm there.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. So my recommendation is one that many, many people will just be like, duh. But, like, I did not grow up eating pumpernickel bread. And for some random reason, a couple of months ago, I bought a loaf of pumpernickel bread and was like, meh, it looks good, and tried it. And now I have a piece of pumpernickel bread for, like, breakfast every single day. So that's my recommendation for food, is pumpernickel bread is actually very awesome.
Is it the funniest name bread, do you think?
There might be funnier out there somewhere.
Pretty good.
It is. I mean, both as funny and as bread.
Yes. I also really like that cooking TikToker, Anna. And I'm not sure if I like it more when the recipes work out or when they don't work out.
I know. They're great either way. It's delightful when he's like, like has that face that he makes when it's actually really good. But it's also really delightful to watch him be like deeply offended by a recipe at the end. Well, he's usually deeply offended by them at various stations along the way. But the end result, the deep offense at the end is always quite delightful. He's very funny.
I really thought the food in Books episode would get all this food out of our system, but it's apparently just made it even more common for us to talk about.
It's a tradition. It's a tradition now. It comes from me. I feel obliged to maintain it, so I
I thought it was RJ that did it first.
I did do it first.
Oh, did you? Okay. It comes from RJ. Sorry.
You could have done it before me, but I at one of our year-end best of the year episodes, I was like, I just want to talk about these noodles I've been making all year. I think you did also participate, though. You were like, oh, we can talk about noodles. I've got noodles to talk about.
RJ, it's not like we remember anything before you joined this podcast. That's too long ago.
No, I don't even remember anything we did on the podcast a month ago. Like, it's gone already. I'm sorry, y'all.
What was the last genre we read, Anna?
Contemporary fantasy.
We recorded that 1 week ago.
Yeah, I was gonna say it hasn't even been very.
Hey, Matthew, you and I already had this conversation where I told you I already could not remember what the episode was we just recorded. We already had this conversation, so that was unfair.
Sorry.
Set you up.
You did.
And to be fair, we also used to call these episodes like what media we were consuming, so it fit in really well to talk about other things that we consume.
Like Kirby. Kirby just consumes everything. Video game reference. Sorry, two of you don't understand what I'm talking about.
Is that your transition?
I wish. It would have been great. It would have been like, oh, yes, I've been playing the new Kirby game on this Nintendo Switch.
Why is Kirby coming up right now? I don't understand.
There is a new Kirby game. I don't think it's there one is. Of the things you were planning to talk about.
I don't own a Switch. Sorry.
You want to talk about a video game, Matthew?
I guess so. This is one that you talked about on a previous episode, RJ, which was Unpacking, which is a really great kind of chill video game that I played with Anna over. We played it together through on video chat things. It's a single player game, but it's not a game that involves like reflexes or anything. You don't need to do anything really fast. It's a game where you are going through someone's life and you're unpacking things as they move into new houses at different points in their life. So it's isometric, single point view of various rooms, and you open up boxes and you take things out and you put them on shelves or in cupboards or under the bed or wherever it happens to be. And you can find out an amazing amount of stuff about this person and their life based just upon the things they own, which I think is really fun. It's really interesting to be able to see, like to be able to say how much about what's going on in their life, like what their jobs are, what their friends are, like how they're doing emotionally. Based on these things. It's really great. It's a great little story. And I really recommend it to folks to check out, even if you don't play video games very often. I don't know, go and watch a video on YouTube of someone playing it. At least two of you have also played it, so I don't know if you have anything to add.
Yeah, I think I already said a bunch of nice things about it in a previous episode, but yeah, I would second your recommendation, even if you don't play video games, to try it, because it's very accessible. Both like in terms of like they really designed it to be accessible to like a wide number of players with various disabilities. But it's also super accessible in that like it's super easy to understand the mechanics, and there's very little like, yeah, there's very little, you don't need to know that much before going in. There's very little text in the game. Like there's not much reading at all to do. It's so laid back and easy and relaxing as video games go.
It also had like so many details. They put so much work into it. I was watching a stream that talked to the creators, and they apparently recorded some horrifyingly large number of sounds, or created a horrifyingly large number of sounds for putting different objects down on different objects.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so like when you put like an object down on a table, it makes a different sound than if you put it on a shelf. And I'm just like, oh, wow.
I just keep thinking about the putting a toothbrush in a cup sound. And it's so satisfying.
Yeah, it's also a nice game to play with somebody else, and that you learn It's kind of an interesting way to share and learn about another person, to share with and learn about another person from their perspective of how they would unpack these things and interpret what's going on and also where they go and, you know, just, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
My first thing is a book, as I am traditionally want to do. It's called L'Homme qui Marche, which is The Walking Man in the English translation. And I came across this tome because I took part in a French comic book reading book club for the first couple months of this year. So I read a ton of French comic books. And this was one that was recommended by the facilitator. It was written by Jiro Chenaguchi. It was first published in a magazine in 1991 and was translated. The French publication was produced in 1995 by Casterman. Translators Takako Hasegawa. And apparently it was adapted to a TV series in 2020, but I have not looked it up. But this one is very, like, it is what the title says. It's a man who goes for walks. It looks kind of like maybe he's a retired businessman or something. Him and his partner move into a new house in this small town. Small city, maybe in Japan somewhere, and every little section is a story of him going on a walk, and maybe something happens, or maybe he just sort of goes on a walk and sees some stuff. I think my favorite one is some kids get an airplane stuck in a tree, so he takes off his socks and shoes and jacket, because he's dressed like slacks and jacket and I want to say real shoes, but like not sneaker shoes, basically. He climbs the tree and gets the plane, tosses it back to the kids, and then he just sits in the tree for a while and looks at stuff. Very peaceful. And then he climbs back down again. That's mostly my favorite because he was smart enough to climb the tree barefoot instead of trying to do it in his shoes. But it's just a series of like vignettes, basically, of a man walking around. And it's a nice way to explore a town. So I know it's a nice way to explore his unnamed town. And I also miss climbing trees because I don't think I've done that since I've left Vancouver. So,
yeah, there's no trees in the National Capital Region.
Listen, I live right next to a big forest. Like, there, I have zero excuse for not climbing the trees.
I'm sure you have excuses, Megan.
Whole pockets full.
I also read a book here in quarter one of the year. I read it back in like late January and through February. The book that I read was Summer Fun by Jean Thornton. And it is a novel that is written in epistolary style, so a series of letters. And it is letters from the protagonist, Gala, who is a young trans woman living in Truth and Consequences, New Mexico. Is that the name of the town?
Truth and or Consequences.
Truth and or Consequences. A town in New Mexico, real town that was named after a game show.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was, well, they changed their name. I don't know if it was some kind of contest or I don't remember the whole story. But you could probably look up the Wikipedia entry about Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and it's probably interesting. But from Gala, living in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, to the mostly unnamed singer-songwriter in the band the Get Happies, who are very clearly a stand-in for the Beach Boys, and the unnamed songwriter being a pretty obvious stand-in for Brian Wilson. And it's told in a series of letters from Gala, who loves the Get Happies, is obsessed with the Get Happies, is moved to Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, because of like a connection to the Get Happies. And early in the book, does a witchcraft ritual to try to summon the songwriter from the Get Happies into her life. And instead ends up having this dream vision of this strange woman with one red eye, And then ends up meeting this woman in real life. And the one red eye is her camera because she is a documentarian who gets interested in Gala and then wants to know more about her obsession with the Gehappies. And I won't go too much further into the plot, but it's the letters are sometimes details from Gala's life, and sometimes it's just letters recounting details from the songwriter's life. And it's unclear throughout the story if these are details that Gala knows because they are details that she knows from, like, all of the research she's done about the Gehappies, or details that she's projecting from her own life onto this person that she's trying to relate to, or if there are details that, you know, she has actual magic powers and just sort of intuitively knows about this person. This book I started reading when I was getting a tattoo, and it held my attention through the whole, like, 3-hour session. So it was a good distraction, a good companion. I will say some of it is very rough to read. There's a lot of very painful and difficult stuff in here about abuse, self-worth and being trans and, there's a lot of painful stuff, but also a lot of really beautiful stuff. Like the writing is so good and so, like, compelling. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that it is rare that I read a full-length novel for adults, not for this show. This one definitely kept my attention. Despite the title and the cover, Summer Fun is the name of the Gehappies' rumored, like, album that was going to be amazing that never got released, which I didn't know that the Beach Boys have a similar album. I think Smile is the Beach Boys album. Yeah. So if you know a lot about the Beach Boys, you'll probably have an extra layer of enjoyment. I ended up learning more about the Beach Boys through reading this and then, like, looking stuff up afterwards. A lot of the Gehappies chapters are dedicated to, like, the creation of that mystery album, Summer Fun. So despite the title Summer Fun and the very cute, fun, bright Beach Boysy cover of the book, it is there's some painful, hard to read stuff, at least for me. I think it'll depend on how close to home that hits for you, but I really loved it. I really could not sit down and read it again because of some of the harder stuff, but it is something that I read recently that made, like, a big impact on me. And if any of that sounded interesting, like, especially if you're interested in the Beach Boys, go give it a read.
So I want to tell a story tangentially related to that, RJ, that is very Matthew. So some version of Smile by the album from the Beach Boys was released in the early 2000s, early mid 2000s by Brian Wilson. And at that time I was the photo and image editor for my student newspaper at university. And for the Halloween issue, I edited bats and pumpkins and stuff into every image that was supposed to be in the newspaper that week, because of course I did.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so I put some bats onto the cover of Brian Wilson's Smile. And then that review didn't run that week. And it ran the following week. And where there were just bats on the cover. They didn't change. I didn't realize it was running the next week. And there were just bats on the cover of the album.
That's an extremely Matthew Murray story.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You can't hear it out loud, but when I said your full name, there was a bat emoji included at the end. So that's your true full name.
Yes.
Have we circled back around? Is it me again?
Who is bat-related content?
I can't think of bat-related content in my stuff. Actually, okay, maybe sort of, kind of. At least it's Halloween-y and or-ish. So my next one is YouTube, because I always do a YouTuber
of course. So my recommendation this time, or my the one that I've been watching a fair amount, is a gentleman named Ryan Hollinger, H-O-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. He's Matthew, I don't remember if I ever mentioned this to you, but he's from Northern Ireland. That's where he's based. So you can hear that and how he speaks. And in fact, that's an ongoing thing in there. He says however a lot, except he doesn't say however. He says however. And it's quite lovely. And what he does is film criticism, basically. I mean, he's watches and responds to films, but primarily what he focuses on is horror movies, which is not a genre I watch. I don't do much of horror or anything. But it's very entertaining to watch somebody else break down what's going on in horror movies that I will never watch. Like, I don't have the problem that somebody's going to spoil something that I want to see myself, because I will never, ever watch these things. This is the only way I will get to understand them, is through this person breaking down what's happening in these horror films. So it's just kind of fun, and he's delightful to listen to, and his presentation on what's happening and why it's happening. He went to film school and everything, and no, that is not exactly what he's doing now. And he's just, you know, he's a young gentleman who's been out of college for film school for a few years and been like, oh, what do I do with this film degree? and discovered a nice little niche on YouTube where he gets to talk about horror films in a way that's very engaging, interesting to listen to, fascinating to hear his take on what's happening and why it's happening within these films and what it means and what he likes or doesn't like about them and how the storytelling works and how the framing works. And they're not super complex. Like, if you are not a film criticism person, you won't get lost in these. You know, they're very approachable to a person, just, you know, a lay person who does not watch horror and does not watch film criticism, to go in and just get a nice little experience of what he's talking on. He has talked about other stuff in more of his earlier videos, but I found him, you know, in these days, and these days, most of what he's talking about is horror films. So anyways, that's my one that I've been watching pretty frequently, kind of mainlining a lot of horror film criticism, which, one of the little quirks of me, I don't watch horror films, but I watch horror film criticism.
That sounds reasonable.
Totally is. Also, he really does say however a lot, like a lot. It's a delightful quirk.
Speaking of quirks, if you have any that you'd like to put in for us to put in our bingo sheet for episode 150, please let us know. What do we see all the time that we probably don't realize and will be horrifically embarrassed by?
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
No problem. The next thing I will talk about is another video game. It's all video games for me this episode. One of my resolutions for the year was to play one video game every month, which is not very many, but I own literally thousands of video games at this point. So yesterday, I was trying to figure out if I owned a game or not. I'm like, I think I own this game. And I logged into my Steam account and it wasn't there. And I logged into my itch.io account and it wasn't there. And I logged into my Origin account and it wasn't there. And I logged into my Epic Game Store account and it wasn't there. And then it was finally in my good old games account. That's where I found it. And I'm just like, holy shit. Too many platforms. But I played a game a few months ago called Hyper Light Drifter, which is a gorgeous pixel art kind of Zelda and Miyazaki inspired action adventure game. You are a person going around a kind of post cataclysmic event fantasy sci-fi world, where you attack things with a sword and a gun, and there's all these different like animal creatures and stuff. And clearly there were giant robots that had attacked things and kind of gotten destroyed. And there's something very bad going on, and the entire world seems to be like kind of in the state of decay. Like it's kind of dying. One of the things that it's kind of interesting about it. A couple of things. One is that there's no dialogue anywhere. So all of the story is told through just images, like pictures that the character, like when a character speaks, they just show you a picture of what's going on. And it's honestly, it's very obtuse. The story, there's like, people have written probably hundreds of thousands of words online about what does the story mean? What do all these different aspects mean? You're like, but what is the jackal? What does the jackal mean? Like, are they dead? Is that an artificial intelligence? Are there space aliens? What's going on? So it's not the most straightforward game plot-wise, except if you're like, oh, you go to this zone and it's the cold zone and you fight monsters and then you defeat that dungeon and then you go to the water zone and you fight monsters there. So it's straightforward in that way. Plot-wise, not so much, but I didn't really care. I love the music. It's great. It's atmospheric. It's fantastic. It is, if you like pixel art, that style in video games, I think it's worth checking out. And the combat and everything is fun as well. I really enjoyed it. What makes something good pixel art is something that I've been thinking about a lot. And I don't know how to tell you that. I don't know how to answer that question. I'm like, why is this so great? Is it the detail? Is it the color? Is it just the design that they've chosen for everything? I just don't have the language necessarily to think about why I like it so much, which is something that I've just been thinking about a lot in regards to discussing visual-based media, is having the language to describe what works about it or what doesn't work about it. And I clearly don't know enough about pixel art to be able to talk about this. I think, like, this is me shot in the dark. I think it's, like, the aesthetics of, like, a Super Nintendo era video game, but with many more colors, I think. I think that's one of the things that I think makes it look so nice. Could be wrong. The other thing that's interesting is that it was inspired, creating the game was inspired by the lead developer's heart disease. And so there's aspects of health things that are in this as well. The main character is very sick at times, and you're not really sure what's going on there. And so it's like, is the entire world is also sick. Characters are sick. So I thought that was interesting.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that.
I considered buying the soundtrack on vinyl, although it also seems like listening to it outside of the game is something that I would definitely do, but I feel is something that other people would find very unsettling to, like, come into my apartment and be like, what are you listening to? What is this strange music?
I feel like people who know you would not be that put out.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So my next book is kind of bat related. It's a book, it's a novella, actually, because it's only 143 pages. The Root of Ice and Salt by José Luis Zarate. And this was recently republished as a translation by Silvia Moreno Garcia, the author of Mexican Gothic. So the author, José Luis Zarate, is a Mexican author, and this was originally published in 1998. And what it is, I'll just read a little bit because it does pretty well. A reimagining of Dracula's voyage to England, filled with gothic imagery and queer desire. And the only thing I would add in there is repressed, very repressed queer desire, because the captain of the boat...
Repressed Dracula?
I mean, if you've seen any of the Dracula stuff, you know how this story goes for the captain of the boat that carries the boxes of earth from Transylvania to England. It does not go well. But the captain of the boat fills his crew with men that he desires but cannot touch for internal reasons and probably external reasons. And they get this job, and things are very gothic and very atmospheric, and the language is just, like, tense and swimming and humid and hot and sweaty. And it helps to be aware of the story of Dracula before going into the novella, like the locations and the ship name and what's going on, or at least somewhat about vampiric lore. But I don't think you have to have actually read the book itself. As long as you've been exposed to, like, media surrounding the Dracula story, you should get the bits and appreciate what's going on there, especially if you like gothic stuff.
Maybe you just read that Twitter thread from a few years back of that person that read Dracula.
Yeah, that was a good thread.
See, Anna knows what I'm talking about.
I know, yeah. Yeah, it was very long.
It was very long, yes.
Very long. It's an entire little novella of its own.
All I remember is someone them being very excited that there was a cowboy in the book. And they're like, why is there a cowboy in Dracula? Which honestly is a very valid thought. I do like the idea of someone who is openly queer but a repressed Dracula. That seems like it would be an entertaining piece of media. Hiding their gothic sensibilities from their friends.
All the bats in the closet.
Yes, exactly. Actual skeletons in the closet. Now we're back to talking about my decor choices.
Great. I'm going to talk about video games. We're going back to video games. And specifically, back to Pokemon. One thing I've been playing a lot in the first part of this year is Pokemon Legends Arceus, which is a game that I had no intention of playing when it was announced. I played a few of the original Pokemon games when I was a kid and then skipped like four or five generations and then started playing again around Pokemon XY and have played all of them, not all of them, all of the new mainline ones. I haven't played any of the remakes. There's a lot of side games I haven't played. And when this one was announced, I was like, that looks kind of neat, but you know, it's not one of the main series games. And so I'm probably going to skip it. And then it ended up coming out on the day that the first day of a vacation that I had blocked off for myself. And so I was just like, oh, well, So I was just like online looking at other people having fun playing it and just like I have a lot of time. So I ended up buying it and playing it. And it ended up, I think, being my favorite Pokemon game, which was a real surprise. If you don't know anything about it, it is more of an open world game than a lot of the previous Pokemon games have been. You have this little town home base, and then there's several fairly large sub areas you can go to and just sort of open world explore and encounter Pokemon the way that you would like enemies in like a regular video game. But you know, it is not the sort of traditional Pokemon thing of they're only in the tall grass. And for a few generations, you've been able to see Pokemon before you encounter them and have a Pokemon battle. But now you don't necessarily have to battle them. They just sort of interact with you like a real animal would, like where some of them are friendly towards humans and will just like trot over and like you can give them food and they're like, cool, we're buds. You can still catch them with Pokeballs and stuff, but you know, you can deploy different strategies. If you don't want to just fight everything that you see, you can try giving them food. You can try sneaking up on them, and distracting them and then throwing a Pokeball while they're not paying attention. And yeah, I love that element. I love coming up with new ideas for how to approach these. And it's not just the same interaction every time. It's a lot more dynamic than previous Pokemon generations. There's also no like gyms or like there's a few Pokemon battles that you get into with other trainers, but Pokemon battles are not really a thing culturally yet. That's the important thing to mention about this game. The plot is that it is set like hundreds of years or maybe about 100 years before the modern Pokemon games.
Before the Great War.
Before the Great War. I mean, maybe, I don't know. This one in particular is set in the Sinnoh region, which is Pokemon Blue, Diamond, and Pearl, which in Legends Arceus is called the Hisui region. And I didn't play Diamond and Pearl, so there's a lot of references that, like, later I found, I was like, oh, this is characters from another, they're supposed to be the ancestor of this other person. Or, like, I'd meet somebody and go, you're clearly somebody. Like, they're clearly making a big deal of you. And I'm sure in another Pokemon game, you are important.
It is so frustrating sometimes to experience media that has that long history and like mm-hmm. you're reading a comic or like watching a TV show or whatever it is, and there's like, you know, the last second, the last page reveal, and you're just like, who is this? Should I know who this is? And the fans are like all like freaking out. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so-and-so. And you're just like, I don't know. It has no impact on me whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the reasons I was not super interested in this game before playing it, because I was like, I didn't play the generation that this one's based on. But I feel like I didn't, like, I'm sure, like, if you did play and are nostalgic for it, there's a bunch of other layers of enjoyment you get out of it. But for me, I really enjoyed coming at it with like fresh eyes and you know, I felt like I was surely I was missing things, but I didn't care. You know, I think I've mentioned on this show before, I've started reading Art of Mirror here at book two, and people are like, how could you? And I'm like, I don't care. Like, if I'm enjoying the thing that I'm enjoying, it's okay. I'm not like an order purist in that way.
RJ, just so you know, I did edit out you saying that name in the last episode.
Yeah, I re-listened and I heard it, yeah.
So I can just continue doing that as well. I think that could be our new in-joke for the podcast.
Boy Wizard.
Occasionally I'll watch like a superhero movie with my partner, and half of the time this requires like a 30-second like, so here's what's happening in the universe previously, because right. I tapped out at like the first Spider-Man or something. And then we watched like Venom.
Which first Spider-Man, Megan?
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that. What is going on and why do I care about these people? Okay, let's go.
My advice, Megan, is don't let anyone make you watch Morbius. Everything I've heard is that it's terrible. And not good terrible. RJ, I was just making that up about the Great War. I have no idea. That's like one of the fan theories. That they're like, why are there children going off to fight and there's no adults around? And it's like, oh, there's a giant war and everyone died. It's like a weird fan theory I've read about. Yeah. It's a fantasy world and it's not real. Oh, that's the solution.
I have more Pokemon to talk about. And so I don't want to go too far off on this tangent. But I heard one theory about how there's the system of gyms and battling happened because Pokemon are like infinitely powerful. And there needs to be some sort of structured way to like engage them in contests of power, or else if that like organized structure didn't exist, then it would just be like that would be run by crime syndicates. Like that is, they made a sanctioned version of that so that it's not just like criminals who have the strongest Pokemon running everything. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
For more Pokemon talk, tune into our Twitch stream coming up soon, next month.
Yes. If we have a date for it before this episode comes out, we'll edit it in. If not, check the show notes on our social media. I'm sure we will announce it.
I think we've talked ourselves into doing this, RJ, at this point.
Oh, yeah. I'm 100%. Come on. If you don't want to do it, I'll do it without you.
No, we'll do it. It's good.
I've got one more thing to say about Pokemon Legends Arceus, and then I have another Pokemon thing to quickly mention. So Pokemon Legends Arceus, yes, there's no gyms or anything. It's set in the history. That stuff doesn't exist yet. So it's all research-based tasks, which I also ended up really liking. That like the thing that you're trying to do is not like there's always been a Pokedex in each one where you're trying to record all the Pokemon, but it felt so secondary. And also you always had to trade with somebody in order to complete it. And so I've never done that in any other Pokemon game. This is the first Pokemon game where I 100% completed the Pokedex. I caught all the Pokemon. And then I also did enough research tasks that I like 100% completed it. And got the shiny charm, so now I can go shiny hunting if I want to, which I've not done because it's really boring and repetitive. I just really like so much like interacting with Pokemon in a way that feels more natural and more varied and is based around like researching and learning and not necessarily about battling. Even though like there's still battles and that part is still fun. There is a flaw to Pokemon Legends Arceus, which is that some of the battles that are not battles are just sort of like Dark Souls boss style fights where you're just your character like throwing bags of herbs essentially at a Pokemon in order to try to calm it down. And you have to memorize their moveset and dodge and weave and wait for openings. And that part sucks. That is the one negative thing I'll say about Pokemon Legends Arceus, that is so not fun. And if they release more in this vein, I hope they don't keep that part of it. So I finished the plot of the game. I 100%ed the Pokedex. I double 100%ed the Pokedex. And I did the DLC. And so I still needed my Pokemon fix. And so the other Pokemon thing I want to quickly mention is that I have started playing competitive online games on Pokemon Showdown, which it, I didn't, like, I had seen people play these before, but then I found out that it is just a website where you just play this in browser, and it's like an open source, free, unofficial, like very comprehensive Pokemon battling simulator, where you just go to, I think it's play.pokemonshowdown.com, give them a name, like you don't have to give them your email address or any personal information, and you just play it in browser. You don't have to download anything. And it just seems like it's such a wildly powerful engine that is just for free on the internet. And so I've started playing those a little. I am mostly interested in playing with people I know using that platform, which you can do, but I don't know that many people who super want to play Pokemon games online with me. But yeah, I've started playing a few competitive games with random people. It is, I will say, if you are a casual Pokemon fan, kind of a nightmare to try to do that, to try to just play against random people, because it is a whole different game than the playing Pokemon on your own. Pokemon on your own is a very easy game, and Pokemon against people who play it competitively is four-dimensional chess, truly. And that is all. I've used up my Pokemon budget for the episode. I truly feel like sometimes like a 10-year-old who like I was telling my partner about a match that I was in, and I was like, well, he had this Pokemon and it has this ability, but he tried to use this move on my Pokemon, and then he didn't know that I didn't have an item, because if you don't have an item, then this move's extra powerful. And so that's how I, anyway, just like some really deep, like hyperfixated 10-year-old energy coming off me in waves when I talk about Pokemon sometimes.
It's great. I love it. Also, you can have my Pokemon budget. I don't have anything whatsoever to say about Pokemon in the least, so you can just take mine.
We really need to, I think, look at our budget again if each of us has a Pokemon budget.
That's why this podcast doesn't make any money.
I spend it all on Pokemon. That's some real 10-year-old thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that is how I spent all my money when I was 10.
All right, I have absolutely nothing that even vaguely resembles a transition out of that one whatsoever.
Sorry.
We're going to go in like totally different territory of like conspiracy theory thinking. Like, so I've been on this kick recently of sort of thinking about how just trying to understand more about how people come to conspiracy thinking or to other forms of thinking that I personally think of as like problematic, like fascism and like racism and stuff like that. So I've also been into audiobooks a fair amount, and I've been using Libro FM, which is an audiobook platform that specifically works with independent bookstores. And so you can select what bookstore is your local independent or whatever independent bookstore you kind of want to support. And a portion of your monthly subscription rate goes to them. And then also a portion of like what you buy, if you buy additional books, goes to them. So you're sort of supporting an independent bookstore, and you're getting your audiobook fix, without using something that is owned by Amazon. So it's a nice platform, actually. They have a nice little app. It works great.
So that's what I have been using, and I've been listening to a fair amount of audiobooks. So all three of the ones that I'm talking about are books that I listen to as audiobooks, although one of them I am consuming for the second time, and I now have it in physical too because I'm kind of going back and forth because I'm doing it for a book club. Anyways, point is, it's all of these are around the concept of sort of conspiracy thinking or misinformation or how we get to a state of belief where we are willing to harm ourselves and others in order to believe that we are in a superior position in life in some way, right? So the first one I want to mention is called Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything by Kelly Weill, W-E-I-L-L, narrated by G. Sands. This book is it's specifically about Flat Earthers as the conspiracy group that it's focused on. But it goes back into the history of how that developed and where it comes from. And then it talks more generally about conspiracy culture and thinking and who these people are. And it's a fairly compassionate look at it, where she actually goes and, you know, meets and talks about people that she got to know and connect with within that culture. And then she also talks about like veering off into more dangerous spaces a little bit. Another book I listened to that I'm not going to talk about here was about like QAnon specifically that really broke down like all the the timelines and the belief systems in QAnon. That one is this book is nice because it's more of a broad overview of conspiracy thinking, right? It gives you a way into it that isn't tied into some really painful and difficult aspects of it that some of us have had to deal with in our families around QAnon and stuff like that. Flat Earthers feels a little less dangerous than QAnon conspiracy thinking does, right? So it's a little easier way to get into thinking about how do people end up here and what are they doing and why are they in these spaces and what are they believing and what's going on there. So that was one of them. The other one that I listened to is called Dying of Whiteness, How the Politics of Racial Resentment is Killing America's Heartland by Dr. Jonathan M. Metzl. This book is a look at, from three specific policy angles, gun control, medical, insurance, like basically Obamacare, or what we call Obamacare, and, what was the other one? School, funding. From three different states, Missouri, Kansas, and Tennessee. And it looks at what these states did in relation to these different topics. And it talks about, he goes and interviews people within those states in each of those different areas and topics and holds some focus group sessions because there's actual research going on in here because he is a sociologist and psychologist. Anyways, so he does a fair amount of, there's a lot of research in here. He pulls up a lot of numbers and a lot of data, but he also talks a lot about what's missing, like how we've made it actually like against the law for the United States government to fund research into what guns do in our communities. You can't do research on guns, basically, in the United States. It's against the law, or at least it's against the law to fund it through the U.S. government, which is one of the major funders, right? So it has to be funded through other means. So he kind of looks at all of this and why a lot of this is just basically comes down to people wanting to continue, you know, people who are living in various forms of disadvantaged situations and poverty and who are scared or who are losing their jobs, who are going through a lot of social and economic change in their lives, and how the way they're seeking stability is to reinforce over and over again their status in whiteness, and what this does culturally to do that, which is it disadvantages everyone, including them. And he actually like really breaks down a lot of both the thinking and the process and what's actually happening based on this. And I think that ties super well to the third one, which is called Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents by Isabel Wilkerson, which I'm reading for the second time because I'm reading it with a book club right now. And this is about she breaks down the idea of racism as a caste in the United States as a caste system, similar to like what would we think of as in India, right? If you're in the North American context, you're, you know, taught about the caste system in relation to India, but you don't necessarily relate it back to racism in the United States. So she says this is basically the same thing and breaks down why and how. And so this looks at like not just the systemic, like when we talk about systemic racism, we tend to think of the actual systems as in like how zoning laws and economic policy and like drug policy, drug laws and like jails and all that kind of stuff is used to support racism. But she's actually talking about what are the underlying social systems in there and breaking that down and giving us a look at like the specifics of how it is enacted changes over time. But underneath that, there is a system and it's a caste system. And so I think that ties really well into reading Dying of Whiteness. Both of those, I think, tie really well into Off the Edge. So I just thought this was a really good trio of books to get me thinking through these topics and approaching them. All of them were written very well. Off the Edge is super readable. Like, this is written very approachably, really creates a story and narrative around it without being false to, like, what's going on there. Dying of Whiteness has a little more of the number stuff in there because doctors want to use their evidence in there. So you got to have some tolerance for like a whole bunch of numbers getting thrown at your head at certain sections. And then Caste is also, it's very readable. The challenge I had with listening to it as an audiobook is there are times when she's sort of like listing out the structures of caste and what they are. And I kind of lost track in there and I wanted to be able to see it visually on the page so that I could like connect the components together. So I found that one a little bit easier to have. I both listening and reading it for the second go through, just going back and forth between the two, but it's nice to have the book as a physical backup to help me keep track. So anyways, it's 3-in-1. It's all just tied together with that thematic component in there. So that's been big chunks of my last few months of reading. Plus, I threw in Libro. Like, I went all over the place on there. That was a whole bunch of things at once, you guys.
Take that, TBR.
I know. Yeah, like, I feel like I should get some kind of, like, cheater's gold star for throwing so many things into one round.
Maybe you get the book club for him belt for this session.
Yeah, for this session. I got it. Do you remember when we made that? I don't know, RJ, if you were like ever aware of with VPL, we made a belt for when we did like the reading challenge thing for like diversity.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, we made a belt. There's a picture somewhere, and I think it's in the browser, like BCLA's publication. I believe there is a picture of us all standing in programming at VPL holding up the belt that was made that got shipped around to different, supposedly got shipped around to different libraries as different people won for the month.
Who's next? Who's got a thing?
Sorry, I'm playing Pokemon Showdown.
Wow.
Did you hear? We're out of our Pokemon budget for this session.
I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm very bad at it.
Yeah. I paying full attention. It is four-dimensional chess. Like trying to multitask while playing that game is, you're going to lose.
You have to know like what the Pokemon types are and what they're weak to. And I just have no idea.
Oh, yeah. I know that kind of stuff, like mostly, occasionally I have to Google something, but I mostly know the type weaknesses and strengths, but I'm out of my Pokemon budget. There's also abilities and like everybody's got different like physical and special defense scores. And
Matthew, you are putting RJ in Pokemon debt.
I'm in Pokemon debt.
Yeah, you have officially put RJ into Pokemon debt. This is your fault. You need to get RJ out of Pokemon debt now.
I closed the window. It's done. I'm probably never going to look at it again. I'm just shocked it exists because it's not legal. You know, it's a fan thing.
Right. It's unofficial.
Nintendo is usually really litigious.
Right.
Okay, the final thing I'll talk about is another video game called Wandersong. I got this from the recent itch.io bundle in support of Ukraine. RJ is very excited about Wandersong.
I'm making like a sort of happy Kermit Muppet face.
There's some wiggles.
Wondersong is a like 2D side-scrolling friend-making game. You go around. It's really all fetch quests. You talk to people. You solve their problems. You sing songs. You teach people songs. You learn dances. There's like there's combat and fights, but it's all just singing. It's a really cool control scheme where your right analog stick can go in 8 different directions. You know, you can push it up, down, left, like northeast, northwest, and whatever. And each one is a different tone. And so it's like there's like rhythm game elements and you have to like match certain things in the combat is in quotation marks. It's really cute. It's all about making friends. There's like a anxious, angry witch character who I really liked.
Yeah.
She's great. I really like her.
I told Matthew that was definitely a relative from somewhere in his family.
It's Muppety is a good word in regards to the art style sometimes, because some of the people look like humans and others I'm like, that is just a Muppet. It's kind of strange. The aesthetic is like, the art is not particularly complicated or anything, but the aesthetic fits the game really well. The main character is really cheerful despite the world being in the process of ending. It's a lot of fun. It's worth checking out if you like games about making friends with some combat-ish stuff in it.
I will say one thing about the control scheme you mentioned with that wheel of different tones that you can use sometimes to battle, sometimes a lot of times to like solve puzzles and do tasks. And one thing that I appreciate about it, I was like reading about the creator or the team that made the game, is that the puzzles and things never rely on the musical tone alone. So there's also a color assigned to each note on that wheel. And so you could, if you wanted to, play the game on mute and still be able to understand the cues for what you're supposed to do.
So yeah, it's you travel around a fantasy world. There's different towns. You like, you know, there's ghosts. There's, you join a band. There's pirates. It's a lot of fun. There's some great like cave trolls. I really like the cave trolls.
Yeah, I was gonna say are they Yetis or maybe they're trolls?
Giant monsters that live in a cave. It's probably cold. I don't know exactly what they are, but yeah.
There's bugs.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay, so my last thing is probably the least accessible thing.
It appears to be a handwritten notebook.
Listen, I wrote notes. I'm trying to be prepared. There were so many things I could have talked about, and I resisted.
Unlike Matthew, who both did not prepare and then went off to play a game during the middle of the recording.
Ooh, who is the worst masochist?
I thought you were going to say, Anna, unlike you and I, who did not resist talking about, like, smushing a bunch of different things.
Yes, absolutely. That too. I know. Megan gets the award for possibly being the only one who actually properly prepared and disciplined herself.
Most restraint award.
Responsible.
All the gold stars. Everybody gets one.
Yeah.
So for the French comic book club thing, I saw this book before the book club happened, and it wasn't released yet, so I started reading this, the artist's back catalog. So the artist is Vivienne, which is the pen name for Sylviane Minard, who is a Montreal-based artist and creator. She's also music composer. At least that's what she studied. And the book is Football Fantasy. It has nothing to do with football. But it came out this March 2022. It's like hefty. It's 516 pages. It's a graphic novel, but that's still like pretty big. And it's written in French. There's a little bit of English. And then there's a made-up language, which I think is possible to maybe figure out. Like a Rosetta Stone type situation, but I did bother because it was hard enough reading the thing in French, never mind the made-up language. And I think there's more to appreciate here if you are at least moderately aware and conversant in Canadian political context and some history stuff about like Quebec and Canada and stuff. But maybe you would enjoy the storyline regardless, even if you didn't know which political parties were being made fun of at a certain time. So there's like three strands of the story. We start out with two girls are running away from a murderous robot. One of the girls is 12. The other one is like 6. So there's like a caretaker relationship between the two of them. They manage to escape from this weird, terrible lab thing, and they come to a sign that says Football's Fantasy, and they turn to go into that town. So the name of the town is Football Fantasy. And when they arrive there, they realize they can't understand anything that anyone is saying. It's pretty terrifying. They end up in the apartment of an old woman who they can't even communicate using emojis, which is really funny because the 6-year-old is like, do the poop emoji! So that's their storyline. They've escaped. They're trying to like get in contact with someone that will rescue them, basically. And the environment they're in within is just completely confusing and they don't know what to do. The second strand is like, we go back in time, maybe a couple years. And we're getting the backstory of how the lab came to be, like what the girls are running from and the people involved. And there's this kind of like the opening scenes, you don't understand why now, but through the story, you understand, like it kind of breaks your heart. What has happened? And then the third thing is like, you're following around a youth of the Football Fantasy. So the setting is Canada, only we've flipped it backwards so that Quebec is west instead of east. And off the coast of Gaspésie, there is a little island of Football Fantasy people who don't speak the language of anywhere else and are very mad about being isolated and stuff. And so there's a youth in the town that the two girls went to. They've got a bad relationship with their father, clearly, in a teenage kind of way, and they're busy doing some amount of, like, vandalism and encounters with police and police brutality and hijinks. And then also there is, like, an election coming, so the political parties, and then riots happening and stuff and things. So, like, if you've got some background in, like, the student protests of 2012 or, like, the 1970s and what happened in Quebec and stuff like that, there's, like, more to get from the different storylines that are going on. But otherwise, it was just a really interesting, very Canadian, I guess, or very Quebec, maybe. I don't know. It was delightful. And more so because when I first saw the book cover, I was like, oh, that looks interesting, but it wasn't out. So I read all this back catalog. And so I got a sense of the artist and how that artist had progressed from these kind of like autobiographical comic strips they put online. It was a web comic, whatever. And then a few more like story-based stuff. This is over probably 10, 15 years of artist work before she produced this like really complex, engaging, like complex art-wise, complex story-wise. So it was just really lovely to see someone like through that little career evolution and produce something that like is so amazing. So I really enjoyed it.
I read her diary comic about going to Japan, which was a fun little comic.
Mm-hmm.
Also in French. I don't think it's been translated either.
No, I think maybe one thing has been translated into English, but I don't remember the name.
There'll be a link in the show notes.
Yay! The facilitator of the book club knew her because he's involved in the comic community in Quebec. And so he was like, oh, she's crazy. She's wild.
I saw her do a really good presentation, which was at an academic conference, and hers was by far the best presentation at that conference. She took advantage of the presentations being pre-recorded to the full extent.
I'm so intrigued now.
I know. Me too.
To be fair, doesn't take a lot to be the most interesting presentation at an academic conference.
At an academic? Yeah, no. No, this is true, but still.
I've got my last thing, which is a Wikipedia page. It's not really an article, One of my sources of joy in life, and one of the ways that I spend time with my partner, is to read things out loud to him from the internet. And one of my favorite things to read out loud is unusual Wikipedia articles. There's like a list of lists somewhere on Wikipedia, and I feel like I've hit a lot of the interesting ones from that in the past. But I found a new treasure trove, which is the Wikipedia page of unusual articles. And there's just like hundreds of things here.
Can I just break in here briefly to say I suddenly have a really strong, like, sympathetic connection to your partner. Sorry. Okay, go on.
I mean, he loves Wikipedia. I don't know if that's also true for you, Anna, but like we also had for a little while, I haven't updated it in a while, but I had a running list of on my phone of Wikipedia articles Ian was reading when I asked him what he was doing.
I like it.
Just to see the smorgasbord of like, when I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm reading the Wikipedia article on, you know, this obscure island in the Pacific or whatever. But Wikipedia unusual articles, super fun. I can't remember exactly how I stumbled upon this. I might have just been like Googling like Wikipedia weird stuff. I'm trying to find some fresh material. I'll give a quick plug to Depths of Wikipedia, which is an Instagram account that I also enjoy quite a bit.
That's what I thought of when you mentioned this.
Yeah. They are great. If you want a curated experience, Depths of Wikipedia is a lot of fun. But I just wanted to highlight three of my favorites from the Wikipedia unusual articles list. Volkswagen Currywurst, which is an article about the Volkswagen brand of sausage that the Volkswagen car company manufactures. They make more sausages per year than they do cars. They're essentially a sausage company that also makes cars.
I think that is an unfair, like, the cars cost a lot more money.
It's true. They have an official part number, the sausages. And so the sausages are the like highest production part. That Volkswagen produces for at least the last several years.
That was done intentionally for humor.
Definitely. I feel like this is an April Fool's joke that got out of hand.
Yeah.
I mean, it was originally because they served them like at the cafeteria of various Volkswagen plants. And then they started just also like producing them to sell other places.
It's like the Swedish meatballs at IKEA, except more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Another favorite is the Danish protest pig, which is another name for the Husum red pied, which is a rare breed of domestic pig.
Oh, this pig. Yeah. I know this pig. Yeah. I read this article. It's really fun. This is a great story.
The Danish protest pig, it is a breed of pig that has markings that resemble the Danish flag and was bred specifically during when Denmark was under Prussian occupation and rule. And they were prohibited from flying the Danish flag. And people bred this pig that looked like the Danish flag as an act of protest. And one of my favorite things is that they thought that the breed was extinct. Like in the 1960s, they were like, there's unfortunately no more of these pigs left. And then in 1984, they're like, oh, we found more pigs. So like, happy ending. The Danish protest pig lives on. It is endangered, but they're still around. Yeah, that one's very fun. The one that I read last night to Ian was about the men's 1904, the men's marathon at the 1904 Summer Olympics.
How many people died in that one?
I don't think anyone died, which is like the reason that it's still funny to read. But it is like a real comedy of errors, and a lot of people like needed serious medical care after it.
I think this might be one I have to admit to having read.
Yeah, so it was like over 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, what is that in Celsius?
That's 32.2 Celsius.
It's real hot, y'all.
I mean, it's real hot for a marathon, says the person who lives in that heat or higher than that heat for large chunks of the year.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was extremely hot. They were on a dirt road, and there were cars driving before and after the racers kicking up more like dust and dirt. And they also only had like 2 hydration points on the route. I think because one of the officials wanted to like test the effects of dehydration on athletes, and it was like ethics were not a real thing yet in that kind of experimentation. And so like among the many things that went wrong in this race, I mean, besides that base level, it was a bad environment for it. Like one of the runners, like the first person to cross the finish line eventually was eliminated because it was found out that he just hopped in a car, like around like mile 9. He was like, nah, and peaced out and hopped in a car and drove the rest of the course. Gosh, the person who actually won, like, I think blacked out multiple times and only made it across the finish line because he was like his trainers were following him and repeatedly giving him small doses of strychnine, which is rat poison, which like in small doses, like I don't know, like if it boosts your adrenaline, but like, you know, made him able to stand up and run in short bursts. But he was like hallucinating and like by, I think they actually carried him over the actual finish line. And he immediately was like seen to by several doctors. Like, yeah, there's more. I think my favorite part, a little bit of a spoiler, but there, at the end, it's talking about one entrant from South Africa, and may have been the first entrant from South Africa in this Olympic event, and finished 9th and said, "This was a disappointment, as many observers were sure Taug could have done better if he had not been chased nearly a mile off course by wild dogs."
Oh my God.
It's just such a footnote. Like, they didn't mention the wild dogs earlier in the article. It's such a throwaway. Just wild. So yes, Wikipedia unusual articles, just the gift that keeps on giving.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing, RJ. You have brightened my evening.
I'm glad.
One day, if you have one of those days where just like every single thing seems to go ridiculously wrong in the most random way, this makes me think of that. And I'm like, yeah, but it could be even bigger.
There could be wild dogs.
There could be wild dogs and dehydration, and the people I work with are injecting me with strychnine. Yeah. And
oh my gosh.
All right, we have no more recommendations because we've already used up all our time.
That's all the things.
All our time is gone.
It's all the media we consumed.
I built a Lego set I really liked recently.
Matthew, Lego is just your eternal recommendation. You just give it to everybody all the time.
I like Lego. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you find your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and a review. If you've already done that, thank you. Also, tell your friends, if you have any. That's getting cut out. Why did I say that?
Yeah, I think a better thing might be tell your friends or coworkers or library patrons or... You're trying to be inclusive of people who don't have friends, which is admirable, but also rude.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m, and our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out at our website, bookclubforum.com. No promises on reading your suggestion, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, May 3rd, when we'll be doing one of our occasional... Nope.
sorry. I didn't quite get that edited.
One of our occasional astronomy and space nonfiction episodes. We try to get one in a few times.
I'm enforcing. We have to do this regularly now.
Join us again on Tuesday, May 3rd, when we'll be discussing the genre of astronomy and space nonfiction.
Then on Tuesday, May 17th, it will be our 150th episode.
Yay!
So we'll be celebrating and talking about things that you want us to suggest, talk about.
Stuff. Things.
Send us your suggestions.
Bingo card entries.
Deep dark secrets.
Unless it's Pokemon. That's in the Twitch stream.
Budget is already used up in debt.
In debt for 1,000 years.
I don't even know how to repay Pokemon debt. Do I get to talk about Digimon or something to repay Pokemon debt? Probably not. Probably that's not the thing to do.
No, please. That's okay. There's other ways.
This is the first cracker I've had from this box, and it's much crunchier than I thought it was going to be. Well, wait, we've got some cat movement. Don't touch anything, Heidi. No. That's something.
That's the opposite of what you said.
You'd see, literally see her face coming in and out of like shot. Mm-hmm.
That sound is my cat sneezing. That's Heidi sneezing.
That's Heidi sneezing?
Bud, you okay?
That's a lot of sneezing.
She tends to do like 10 or 20 in a row.
You done? You all done?
Yeah. Okay, we're almost done. You can leave the room soon.